Want to know how the backroom boys castrate public demands on global warming? Australia's biggest climate whistleblower, Guy Pearce, has released his tell-all book, High and Dry. Radio Adelaide recorded this remarkable speech, which began with the author reading out his own obituary, now that he has been frozen out of government and business. Pearce joined the ruling Australian Liberal Party back in 1989, in the days when the Liberals were committed to reducing carbon emissions. He stayed to become a prominent government spinmeister for Prime Minister John Howard's government, a speechwriter for the Environment Minister of the day, and a representative at the Kyoto Treaty negotiations. Now Pearce has nailed John Howard as a climate denier, who gets both his information and his policy directly from a cadre of fossil fuel and mining companies. Listening to his rapid-fire list of ways the Australian government has delayed any action on climate change, I found myself nodding. How well it all described Canada's Prime Minister Stephen Harper, who represents Alberta, North America's major oil and gas supplier. And of course, U.S. President George Bush, the chief denier and now staller-in-chief for his Texas oil buddies, not to mention the honorary Bushes, from Saudi Arabia. Listen well, Grasshopper, as a total insider spills the hard facts about Australia, even as that country endures a historic drought assigned to climate change. You'll hear how it is all done, as fossil fuel corporations guide the government's hand away from the steering wheel of real action to save the planet. The speech was recorded by Radio Adelaide on July 7, 2007, as part of their Festival of Ideas. Find that at www.radio.adelaide.edu.au. Find out more about Guy Pearce at his website at highanddry.com.au.
Good morning. I'm Hayden Manning. I'm from Flinders Uni, where I teach environmental politics and electoral politics. And it's with great pleasure that we have Guy Pearce here with us today. In the late 90s, Guy was a speechwriter and advisor to the Environment Minister, the then Environment Minister, Senator Robert Hill. And he was very much involved in covering the Kyoto Conference and Australia's negotiations at that and the aftermath. He decided to do a PhD in the late 90s, focusing upon what he observed up close and personal working at high levels in Canberra. And it's now for us all to digest in a book, High and Dry. And after this session today, Guy will be signing, for those who wish to purchase this book, over in the tent. And I'll be one of those, because, Guy, I was unaware of the existence of your book, and only a month ago I was preparing my topic guide. I'll have to wait for next year, I figure, for the required readings for my students. Anyway, this is an invaluable study. It is just so rare that we have access to an insider's views, an account of powerful industry lobbies and how they've impacted on the Howard government. And Guy is an insider who is obviously concerned about the way in which government's been operating in this country. Now, very quickly, finally, Guy explained in an interview last year to the ABC Four Corners that he joined the Liberal Party because he wanted to play a role in government. Well, having read a number of the interviews Guy's given of late, including a podcast which is available from Late Night Live with Philip Adams this week, I'm just not so sure you're going to help yourself to that end of late. We certainly have to thank him for the insights that he offers, and I'm sure all of us will conclude we can only hope that he can eventually deliver on that goal. Anyway, over to Guy.
Thanks very much. Ladies and gentlemen, a whistleblower's book event speech is a little surreal. It's a bit like watching someone give their own eulogy. Some friends and family gathered together at fairly short notice, maybe a few spectators, and even some enemies just to see you off in person. It's a bit different to other book events, less a celebration and more a sombre farewell to the life the author once planned. So today we mourn the loss of the life that Guy Pearce originally had in mind. The plan A he has so comprehensively squandered by writing High and Dry. It was while studying at James Cook University that Guy first took an interest in politics and the environment. Joining the Liberal Party in 1989, and the Australian Conservation Foundation soon afterwards. Then in 1990, he took a job as an advisor to a Queensland Liberal senator. In 1994, with generous references from those who would go on to serve as Howard government ministers and even the Prime Minister's chief of staff, he spent 3 years in America studying environment policy at Harvard and even moonlighting as an advance man on the Clinton-Gore White House and re-election campaign. In 1997, Guy came home and landed his dream job, writing speeches for the first Howard government environment minister, South Australia's own Robert Hill. It was the year in which the Kyoto Protocol was negotiated and even signed by Australia, and so began Guy's immersion into the politics of climate change. Over the next decade, Guy came to know the Howard government's response to climate change inside out. He wrote the rhetoric for the first as ministerial speechwriter. He consulted to the Australian Greenhouse Office. He lobbied the government for everyone from the coal industry to the sugar industry on greenhouse policy. And he spent 7 years of PhD research at the ANU examining the politics behind that policy. And what he saw troubled him more with each passing year. But he maintained his close links with the Liberal Party, sharing a house with one current Howard government minister and meeting regularly with many others. In 2001, he returned to North Queensland to help run a state election campaign, and in that same year he was approached by the federal director of the party to run the in-house think tank in Canberra, the Menzies Research Centre. Guy was a Liberal insider with plenty of options. But Guy's plan A was a parliamentary career, and he hoped contributing to a stronger Liberal Party response to environmental issues. Plan A was looking pretty good. After finishing with Robert Hill and the Environment Department, Guy set up a lobbying business, and by 2005, once it was sufficiently portable, he hoped he might finish his PhD finally and move his young family north. With the strong backing of various Howard government front benches, Guy was to have settled in this Gold or Sunshine Coast hinterland to position himself for a run at a safe House of Reps seat or even possibly the Senate. His green credentials were seen as a rare advantage inside the party. The future looked bright, so bright. But his party's response to climate change kept gnawing on his conscience. Meanwhile, Guy's PhD research had taken a very dangerous turn. He'd uncovered damning evidence suggesting that a self-dubbed greenhouse mafia, lobbyists working for our worst polluting industries, had hijacked our greenhouse response and were running rings around his party. They'd even confessed, this is the lobbyists, on tape to writing the cabinet submissions and ministerial briefings normally prepared by bureaucrats. Guy's fateful decision to include this material in his thesis had tragic consequences. He had hoped his party was oblivious, but they turned out to be complicit. So when these revelations aired on Four Corners in early 2006, Guy's claims were dismissed and brushed under the carpet. Many of us here saw that Four Corners episode, but few know of the aftermath. How MPs who wanted to defend him in Parliament were bullied into silence. How his lobbying business dried up as ministerial doors slammed in his face. That his letter of explanation to the Environment Minister was never acknowledged to this day, and that his thesis was returned express post by the same minister the very day it was received. There was little any of us could do but watch Guy's downward spiral since. The sad retreat into the political exile in the bush outside Canberra. Having had no success in blowing the whistle, he decided to lie low in the political wilderness, but then to return with a trumpet at election time. If the party was not interested in hearing about the greenhouse mafia, perhaps they needed the whole story. So he agreed to write high and dry, and there would be no turning back. He dug himself ever deeper into the quagmire, and it all took its inevitable toll. His generally unkempt appearance, increasingly obsessive and cynical views, a few extra kilos, and two split discs in his spine from spending way too much time at the computer researching the book. He let himself go, and it was painful for friends and family to watch. The publication of High and Dry was really the end of the road, the end of the life Guy planned, and we're all left wondering, why did he throw it all away? Didn't he realise that his actions would offend, embarrass and disappoint so many with whom he'd previously associated? Why the hell didn't he just self-censor his thesis? Why didn't he back off before Four Corners? And why didn't he just disappear afterwards? Why did he have to compound it by writing this damned book? Of course, people like us will get to read the answers to these questions in High and Dry. but most in his former life wouldn't. They wouldn't bother, because for them, the guy they knew is gone, as good as dead in their eyes. But guess what, ladies and gentlemen, I'm still here. And this is no real eulogy. Guy Pearce lives on, and I may not have the same lobbying career, I may not get government contracts anytime soon, I may have no hope of a Liberal parliamentary career, and there'll be no more sitting week dinner invites for me in Canberra. I may even be expelled by the party, but I'm in a much happier place and I have no regrets whatsoever. I wrote High and Dry so that Australians would better understand the dangers of their country's response to climate change in time to change course, because ultimately that was a whole lot more important than my career plans. Australians deserve to know that their government has no plans to cut Australia's contribution to climate change. And while scientists are saying that we need to cut emissions globally by at least 60% by mid-century, after 11 years in office, my party is taking Australia in exactly the opposite direction. Based on current policies, Australia's emissions are on track to increase by 70% by 2050. And I wrote High and Dry so that people would understand why. Because the public deserves to know that the Prime Minister doubts the science, that he even said that Australia should never have been part of the UN Convention on Climate Change. People deserve to know how relentlessly John Howard has promoted fellow sceptics. His resources minister, his number crunchers, the chair of his Environment Policy Committee, if you can believe that, his long-time party president, his chief fundraisers, sceptics one and all. People deserve to know that John Howard has even gone so far as to intervene to overturn pre-selection results in order to keep sceptic backbenchers in Parliament, and that his government even appointed one of Australia's biggest sceptics as a judge for the Eureka Prize for Environmental Journalism. People should know that our sceptic-in-chief long ago took charge of Australia's greenhouse policy, and that he has been determined ever since to avoid emission cuts in Australia or making Australia's biggest polluters pay. While my former boss, Adelaide's own Robert Hill, always looked for a way into Kyoto, John Howard was always looking for a way out. And people should know that the World Environment Day announcement in 2002 that Australia would not ratify the Kyoto Protocol was a decision made unilaterally by John Howard, not by his cabinet. They should know that Howard blocked cabinet proposals for emissions trading in 2000 and again in 2003. And they should know that when John Howard now talks about a new Kyoto, he's actually dressing up a little-known deal secretly hatched in the White House with George W. Bush on the eve of 9/11. A lot of people know about the Free Trade Agreement, but few of us understand the much more telling Australia-US Free Ride Agreement on climate change. I wrote High and Dry because it became very clear to me the Howard government had been sold a quarry vision of Australia's future, a flawed notion that Australia's prosperity rests on cheap coal and on mining, metals and energy exports. It's a vision that ignores history, that commodity booms invariably end, and that the long-term trend for the resources sector is falling commodity prices and fewer jobs, albeit highly paid ones. It's also a vision that ignores reality, that over 70% of our economy and jobs come from the services sector. Howard's Quarry Vision-inspired greenhouse policy claims to stop the carbon leaking out, but its effect has been to let the carbon flood in, racking up huge liabilities that the economy, the whole economy, and future generations will one day have to pay, all to protect industries that provide 10% of GDP and less than 5% of jobs. People should know that successive federal governments have deliberately pursued a dangerous strategy that aims to attract the world's dirtiest industries to this country by keeping their greenhouse pollution free of charge as long as possible. No one doubts that John Howard drives a fast economy, but it's his steering that should worry us all. Because blinded by quarry vision, the Howard government is steering Australia gradually to greenhouse ghetto status. Quarry vision and priced carbon are on a collision course, thanks to John Howard. And unless we change course soon, Australia will be left high and dry in various ways that I explore in the book. I wrote high and dry because I could see that a very different type of carbon capture was going on than the one so often talked up by John Howard as the solution to climate change. People should know that Australia has been captured by our dirtiest industries who have embedded their people into John Howard's very small greenhouse circle of trust, both inside and outside government. From his ministerial colleagues to the sceptic chair of his Environment Policy Committee, to his long-time chief science advisor, who moonlighted for Rio Tinto at the same time, his favourite in-house and external economics, who had client lists full of Australia's worst polluters, the businesses, the think tanks, the lobbyists he trusted most, everyone in his circle of trust owed not just their loyalty but their livelihood to either Howard personally or to Australia's biggest polluters, or in many cases, both. As you'll see in the pages of High and Dry again and again, all Howard ever hears from his circle of trust are messages denying the science and or delaying action. But when you look closely, when you connect the dots as I have, you find that denial and delay are two sides of the same coin, and the coin is coming from the same source as the pollution. It explains just about everything. It explains why on climate change the Howard government is telling so many half-truths and lies to the Australian public. The public's told that cheap fossil fuels, the backbone of our economy, but they're not told that mining, metals and energy generate less than a dollar in 10, less than a job in 20. They're told that Australia is an energy superpower, but not that on John Howard's watch, Australia started paying more for energy imports than it made exporting energy. They're told Australia's on track to meet the Kyoto target, but they're not told we had a head start that enables us to increase emissions 27% and still reach our target. Australians are told we're spending $2 billion on climate change, but not that we're spending three times that amount on 24 fighter bombers the Defence Department says we don't even need. Or that John Howard would have to be 81 years old and win another four elections before that $2 billion budget, which is spread over 25 years, is finally spent. The public is told that the government is preparing the country for the impacts of climate change, a challenge even they have acknowledged is akin to the ageing of the population. But we're not told that John Howard is spending 11 times as much on the war in Iraq as he is on climate change adaptation. The public's told that renewable energy is doing remarkably well thanks to the Howard government, but not that renewable market share is actually shrinking, and that 81% of the funds from our largest federal greenhouse program is going to subsidise fossil fuel companies. The public's told that clean coal and nuclear are the answers, but not that emissions would rise 70% above 1990 benchmark levels even if we had 25 nuclear power stations in this country. Nor is the public told there is no plan whatsoever to capture the vast majority of emissions from our existing coal-fired power stations. We're told that the Asia-Pacific Partnership, put together by Bush and Howard, is superior to Kyoto, but we're not told that the AP6 requires no emission cuts of any country ever, and that the best-case scenario projections are that AP6 member country emissions will double by mid-century, or worse. Australians are told we can even clean up the use of coal in China, but we're never told just how little leverage we actually have, given that we only provide less than 1% of China's coal. Truth be known, John Howard would have a better chance of converting China to cricket. The public's told that our banning of the incandescent light bulb leads the world. But we're not told that we would need 445 announcements of that scale to even stabilise Australia's emissions, and more than 800 to achieve the deep cuts that the vast majority of the world's scientists are saying are essential by mid-century. Australians are told that our uranium exports offset 75% of Australia's emissions. But we're not told that the emissions generated by our coal exports are even greater than Australia's total annual emissions, and that these coal exports are projected to double by 2030. Australians are told that, not to worry, we're just over 1% of global emissions, so we point the finger at others. But we're never told that Australia is the 10th largest emitter, total emitter, in the world, with the 53rd highest population in the world, and that we're the highest per capita developed country emitter. Perhaps the one you've all heard the most. We could stop polluting tomorrow, and growth in Chinese emissions would wipe out the savings in a mere 9 months, so why bother? But of course, every country in the world can use that sort of excuse. China could say, we could stop polluting tomorrow, and global emissions would still rise 87% by mid-century. So I wrote High and Dry so that people would see these and other truths behind the smokescreen that I used to help prepare before the U-turn on Kyoto. And as the 2007 election approached, I came to see the public was going to be deceived even further. There's lots of spin about emissions trading, many years hence, but no details. The pile of loopholes the government has in mind to let our biggest polluters off the hook will not see the light of day before the election. There'll be a little money to stop deforestation in the third world is being sold as breathing life back into the lungs of the world. There's a 5-year investigation into moving agriculture north many decades hence. And lots of talk to give the appearance of being serious. There's even a Grand Sydney Declaration on the way, at a carefully timed APEC meeting to give the impression Australia is leading the world when nothing could be further from the truth. It's all going to be a carefully packaged display of conspicuous greenhouse compassion dressed up as practical action. But it has one common aim: avoid Australia cutting emissions or making our biggest polluters pay. Now that the public won't cop greenhouse denial, my party, regrettably, is redoubling its focus on delay. So they're running a scare campaign saying that Labor's irresponsible to commit to emission reduction targets without knowing the full economic costs. Howard says this puts the cart before the horse, hoping no one notices the pile of dead horses, the pile of internal government and private sector research that has shown for years now that Australia can halve its emissions and its GDP will still more than treble by 2050, and that real wage rises will still outstrip energy price rises. The truth is, the horses have been in front of Howard's cart for many years now, but they died of old age waiting for Howard to move forward. In the face of this deception, the public needs the tools to strip Australia's greenhouse policy of its rhetoric before it's too late. The rhetoric about leading the world on climate change hides a singularly inconvenient truth for the government, that emissions are on track to rise by 70% by mid-century, the equivalent of adding 70 million cars to Australia's roads, or powering 30 million new homes. All the talk of practical action amounts to practically nothing. Now, for the record, I did what I could to raise my concerns within the party, with the then Environment Minister and with various people currently sitting on the Howard Government front bench. I would have warned half a dozen MPs that the Prime Minister was flat out lying to Parliament when he said that deep cuts in Australia's emissions would reduce the size of our economy by 10% and cut wages by 20%. I told these MPs that the real forecasts by ABARE were in fact a 246% GDP increase and an 81% real wages rise, but not one of them wanted to know. I warned ministers here in South Australia that their cabinet colleagues were seeking its extreme Lavoisier group propaganda, denying the science to their own Liberal Party state executive. They turned a blind eye. I spoke to backbenchers who agreed with me that the only thing Australia was saving by not ratifying the Kyoto Protocol was the Prime Minister's face. Even so, they admitted to me that no one had even raised climate change in the coalition party room, even as late as late last year, and that no one was ever going to challenge the Prime Minister on it. Robert Hill told his retirement dinner that not ratifying Kyoto was a huge mistake by Australia. But that was the extent of the in-house dissent, and Robert Hill was leaving anyhow. Of course, it shouldn't fall to a rank-and-file member of a political party to speak out like this, but a decade of backstage passes to the farce that has been John Howard's response to climate change left me little choice. The support I've received from other rank-and-file Liberal Party members in the past week has been extremely gratifying. However, I know that at more senior levels, they will say I've betrayed the party and nothing I can say or do now will persuade them otherwise. But they can't escape the history, and the official policy of the party I joined in 1989, led by Andrew Peacock, which was to cut Australia's greenhouse emissions 20% by 2000. Under John Hewson in the early 1990s, the Liberal Party retained that policy. And as late as 1994, John Hewson was asking the then Labor government why, after 11 years in office, Australia still had the highest per capita greenhouse emissions in the world, a question that still begs asking today. The party that today says targets and timetables don't work, not so long ago boasted that it had committed to earlier and deeper emission reduction commitments than Labor. The Howard government may now have amnesia, but I remain true to the party rather than the leader who abandoned its policies and confused polluter interests with the national interest. In the end, for me, letting Australians know the truth about their response to climate change was the most important thing. And I make no apology for being patriot first, partisan second. And while it's a little bit sad to bid farewell to that life that I had planned, I have no doubt I've done the right thing in shunning the profitable path of least resistance. High and dry will no doubt make me new friends and enemies, but I also hope very much that it makes a difference in time. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Insider Tell-All speech by former Liberal Party insider Guy Pearce, spelled P-E-A-R-S-E. He outlined how the John Howard government has stalled all action on climate change to satisfy the demands of big industry. Exactly the same process is operating in both Canada and the United States. This speech was recorded by Radio Adelaide on July 7, 2007, as part of their Festival of Ideas. Find that at radio.adelaide.edu.au. Find out more about Guy Pearce and his new book, High and Dry, at his website at highanddry.com.au. You've been listening to Radio EcoShock at www.ecoshock.org. That's ECO, shock like an electric shock, .org.